So some of that transactional lower end sales, is that going to be taken over by technology? Probably. It's only a matter of time, but that doesn't mean sales is dead by any means.
Welcome back to the Pursuit of Profit podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode with Dave Mattson, president of franchising and executive chairman of Sandler. Today, we're discussing how Dave started as a client of Sandler in the 80s to becoming the president and largest shareholder, how Sandler became one of the world's leading experts in sales and leadership training. We hope you enjoy the show, and please follow us as we drop new episodes each week on Wednesdays. All opinions expressed by Cliff, Justin, and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Phrenosity and Pursuit of Profit. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. Really happy to have you here. Of guests, you were probably one of the most distinguished in our profession. So I'm honored to have you on, and I greatly appreciate you taking the time out of your very busy schedule. I just learned moments ago, you're actually with your own franchisees at an event, which we could touch on momentarily, but you are the president of now franchising and executive chairman of Sandler. This is a global sales training. I've actually read some of the books back in the late 90s, early 2000s. I think I may be dating myself. Today, I want to touch on a lot of things, and I'm like, where do I go with Dave, right? Do I talk about leadership? Do I talk about sales expertise? Do I talk about the multiple books written? Do I talk about Sandler and the decades of them influencing business and business leaders and salespeople across the globe? So I said, you know what? I'm going to delve into his expertise in sales, leadership, and I want to get your perspective on personal growth, the evolution of sales training. You said something that took me back because I would not have agreed with this. Salespeople and sales managers are made, not born. Decade ago, if someone said to me, do you think you could teach this? No, like you're born with this, right? Talk about that a little bit. Talk about your background, how you got to Sandler. And of course, I definitely want to touch on that quote because I think it's pretty profound.
So I grew up in a household of teachers. Nobody was in the profession of a business of any kind. I kind of bumped into it. I think like most of us bump into a career. You know, there was an opportunity, it happened. I was an entrepreneur at a very young age. We didn't have a lot of money. So, you know, my parents are, you can have anything that you'd like, but you're going to have to find a way to get it. So, you know, shoveling driveways and all that type of stuff. I owned a painting company through college and did quite well. I had 11 crews going. Wow. And then I realized I just didn't want to be in that business. I didn't want to be 65 out there, you know, painting houses. And so what I did was I worked for a neighbor of mine who happened to be a Sandler client. And they forced me to go, to be honest, because I didn't think I was, you know, if you take all the profiles, I shouldn't be in the profession I'm in, according to, you know, what they say. And, you know, in order to be hired by that company, I had to join Sandler. And so I was a typical hostage in the back of the room, Cliff. You know, the guys that you send who are sitting there trying to figure out how to get out for the second day and not show up and tell their employer that they were there. That type of guy.
That was you?
Yeah, well, that was definitely me.
That's great.
Because I thought if you worked harder than anyone else, you would make more money than anyone else. That was always my philosophy. And so what I learned, though, Sandler was based on psychology. And once I figured that out and that I didn't have to be what Hollywood portrayed as salespeople, slick and manipulative and things of that nature, I was like, okay, all right. Basically, I'm selling all day long. I'm selling my friends on what I'd like to do for the weekend because I have a different agenda, you know, and back then I wasn't married. But I realized if I could just create some guardrails, and the reason I loved Sandler was because it wasn't a script-based program. It was a conversational-based program. And he had rules, just like spelling I before E, except after C, and all the other things that we've learned. He just said, listen, if you're in this situation, think about it this way, because to script every situation was impossible. And I just fell in love with it. Practiced, because, you know, as being an introvert, I didn't want to make sure I had all my talk tracks down. I joined the person who trained me. About 2 years into it, I became the number one salesperson. And I was like, hey, in order to become a machine, maybe I should work for the machine. And I went to sell Sandler for 2 years up in Connecticut, met Dave Sandler. By then, I was all in, right? And by the way, I didn't use Sandler initially. I only used Sandler the very first time when a deal was going south. You've never been in that situation where you know there's no way you're closing this deal?
Yep.
Exactly. And I said, hey, let me use one of those Sandler things, because if it doesn't work, it's Sandler's fault. But it worked. And that's the next thing, you know, I was using it all. So I saw Dave Sandler, as I said, when I worked for a local franchise. And of course, you know, I love the system. He said one day, I'm looking for people to help me scale. And next thing, you know, I was at home office. So I went from Connecticut down to Maryland and spent 6 years with David before he passed. And it became a 25% owner very quickly. And then ended up owning, you know, buying out the rest of the family, basically. Over a period of about 10 years, I bought the rest of the family out and became the sole stockholder in 2012.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I did not know that. Interesting. All right. So you bought the family out.
I bought
the family out. Because he died in the 80s?
He died in 95. So I became a part owner in 94. I was his protege. And so it was awesome when he was alive. But when you're a non-family member and I am his protege and not one of his children, it was a bit of a problem, as you can imagine, when he passed. So, you know, I just worked hard, kept my head down and started buying everybody out. And that's what I did. Unreal. And so, yeah, I ended up being the sole stockholder from 2012 all the way up to 2022 when I took some chips off the table.
Okay. You went through all the name changing and simplifying Sandler Selling System to Sandler Institute. And it's just Sandler now, right? It was Sandler Training, but aren't you Sandler?
We went from Sandler Sales Institute. The day I took over, I changed it to Sandler Training. And then we changed it to Sandler because everyone knows us as Sandler. No one says Sandler Sales Institute. And we do more than training. So it's just natural.
That's great. So you're a living example of the quote that salespeople and sales managers are made. Yeah. They're not born. Like, you truly believe that to your core.
Were you born doing what you're doing today? I don't know. Are doctors born doctors? Right. I think you have some natural tendencies. It takes more energy for me to go on stage. It takes more energy for me to do things. Doesn't mean I can't do it. And I think if you just go into it, that mindset, oh, I can't do that. I wasn't born there. Look around. I don't think anyone was born anywhere. I think they just made the most of an opportunity and they went forward. Now, do some have to work harder because it's just not in their swing zone? Sure. But there's an awful lot of things that come naturally to me as an entrepreneur that may not come natural to a born salesperson. And so it kind of levels out after a while. But I don't use it as an excuse, and I just don't believe it.
I'm in a weird spot with you because I want to talk about the book and the core principles, right? But I also, for the show, I need the audience to understand that you are a franchise opportunity. People can invest in this brand, right? So I'm a little bit conflicted. I think what I want to do today is I want to get some of the franchising housekeeping out of the way. And I'd like to just spend some time picking your brain on like the upfront contract, the techniques, the psychology, the dummy curve. I have personally grown through, what was it? You can't teach a kid to ride a bike at a seminar. So I actually learned negative selling from that. I never understood the concept. I thought it was odd. And also no is the whole concept of no.
Okay.
I was always a young person in sales and in business. I was an investment banker in my 20s. I was like the youngest guy in the room. And I worked for Solomon Smith Barney, which was an old, staunchy firm. And I always felt like I had to be smart. Well, guess what? The dummy curve is real. Tell us about the franchise opportunity. Tell us about the investment, who you're looking for, because I will tell you, I've been doing this 20 years. People think that they need to be you to do this. Is that true? Like, are you looking for you? Tell us a little bit about who you're looking for as a franchisee and some of the economics.
Okay. So because of what we do, we have a whole program just for entrepreneurs, taking their business from where they are and sales leadership and then sales. So I'm looking for business people. I'm not looking for, you know, a rock'em sock'em salesperson. Of course, it's great, but I'm looking for somebody that wants to build a business that is willing to roll up their sleeves and in some cases, go backwards in time, meaning that you're going to have to carry a bag and make a call. I mean, we don't have a franchise where you pick the right corner and hopefully, you know, you're on the right side of the traffic lane. You got to go develop the business. And so we're looking for people who, you know, make good money before they come to us, are willing to do what it takes. We give you the guidelines. We give you the recipe. We do all those things. We assign a coach for you. But, you know, the investment is $49,000 to get involved. And there's the fees are a slight monthly fee and then there's a small royalty. But, you know, I just gave out, we're with our conference, I just gave out five over 30 year plaques. That's how long people have been with us as franchises. And that's how I do this every conference. It's amazing. I've known most of these franchisees longer than I've known my children. If you just kind of put it into context for a second. And so we're getting people of different ages, different experiences. But in general, I think it would be nice if you had management and sales background. But I've got top producers that didn't have that were sponges and did exactly what they were told. and made it. But I think I've got somebody who does, I just gave her an award, no sales background, but she only does customer service and customer success. That's her swing zone. Is she ever going to go and talk to an investment banker? Probably not, right? But because we have so many different programs with so many different avenues, it doesn't really matter.
You have heard from so many exciting franchise brands in a podcast, and you may be sitting there thinking about which ones could be the best fit for you. If this is the case, give us a call. We provide a free consulting service to prospective small business owners like yourself, and we will help you take a disciplined approach to determining which brands could be the best fit for you. Call or text us at 561-277-3710 or visit www.franosity.com. That's www.franosity.com. We look forward to hearing from you.
Okay. So entrepreneur, follow my system. Very low investment. They don't need to be a rock star, prolific salesperson. Helps, but not a requirement. Helps. Yeah. Can you build a team? Can you follow my system? Can you execute flawlessly? Can you do all these things? Man, that's a really low investment. That's the all in?
That's the all-in investment?
Describe that territory for that investment. And then you come on with a lower investment than what we launched last week.
The state by which you reside is your territory. It'll be a non-exclusive. You can work outside. So hypothetically, let's say that you're in the state of California, as an example. You can market anywhere that you'd like in California or in the state that you're in. You can have salespeople, you can have support people. What you can't do outside the state that you reside in is actively market, like just blast, start just blasting. That doesn't mean that you can't, work your natural referral market. You can leave your territory, and they all do, anytime that you'd like, as long as you're referred in. Because let's just face what happens. You're doing work with company A, an HVAC company or a tech company, and they say, this is awesome. We need you to call on our client or go call on our home mothership, the home office. And now you're working off referrals, because that's really what happens. You're going to have a baseline where you got to go find the clients. If you do your job and you really increase the productivity of that person in that company, you're on referrals from that point forward. So you're all over the place. I was in Dallas a couple of years ago, and just coincidentally, I looked back and we had three franchisees standing in line to check in, all doing programs for Dallas-based companies, and none of them lived in Dallas. So you can go where you'd like, but you can't actively prospect outside of the territory that you have.
Understand. Yeah. Earnings claim?
So 22-23, the overall for 22 is 825. Our high was 5.3, and 23 was 736 is our average. And our high is 5.5 mil.
Wow. That's disclosed in the FDD.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of these are, you don't need a whole big staff. We have a lot of people who are what I'll call solo entrepreneurs. They're by themselves. They came out of corporate. They don't want to babysit. They don't want to do any of that stuff. They don't have a salesperson. They're by themselves. Will they get an admin or somebody to help them? Probably at the end of the first year, because they want to scale themselves. If they don't, we have plenty of resources where they can have a shared resource. Not a problem. For the most part, our people are building small businesses. They have one or two support people when they're just flying along. We probably have 50% of them have a salesperson along with that, because they're trying to build a business.
Right.
I've got two groups of people. I've got a group that wants to build a business, wants to build something they can sell, right? Those are the people on the higher end. I've got another group that really just comes in and says, I want to make more than I'm making now. I want to make an impact, right? And help people grow, because it's my chance to give back. Also do something I'm super passionate about, control my destiny. But I don't really want to build this empire. I want to go, I want to go coach my kids when I want to. I control my own calendar. And that's a bit of a challenge for home office, if you think about it. I'd love everybody building a monument for themselves and hiring, five or six salespeople. But that's just not the person I attract.
That's wild. I'm still digesting the fact that 36 years ago, you were a customer, you were a client, and now you own the company. That's mind-blowing, really. It's like that Cy Sperling. Remember that guy with the hair club for men? I'm not only
or Gillette, or the razor.
That's right. Exactly. That's funny. I am amazed at that low investment, such a high average revenue per location in the FDD. That's mind-blowing. And some truly outlier rock stars in the 5 million range.
We had 50,000 people come through our system a year. That's how many clients are coming through our system a year. 31 countries, so 50,000 globally. And the majority of our offices are in the US.
When someone goes to training, what is the what is the direction when you leave this room? We taught you everything you need to know about this business. Of course, there's ongoing I get it. But you have completed basic training. What is the guidance on go back to your market and hunt this vertical first? Like, cut your teeth here. What is that directive?
It's not a vertical. It's the size of business, because we've got so many different verticals, if you can imagine. So it's really your swing zone are companies that are doing under 150 million. The companies that you're really attracting are companies doing under 50 million during a 2-week sales cycle, 2-call close. It's kind of simple, you know, so that's really, and we go out and say, create a charter program where go find 20 business owners, just get them involved, give it to them. Don't try to pick them off one at a time. Give it to them, start, get it going. And what you'll find is it works off referrals. And so that's really what we're helping you do, is to say, here's how you get your first 2 programs up and running. Here's how you fill that first class. And it is going to be business owners and sales leaders. You are going to discount your price on purpose, because I want you to jumpstart it, because I want you to feel like, hey, I'm in business, you know, and I'm not looking around like, oh my gosh, you know, I can't pay my bills. But you feel like a business owner, the momentum's going, and then the referral machine kicks in. So that's really what we're focused in on, is what do you do in the first 90 days? We're not going to be trained. Listen, we're a training company. So if we can't train you, we got problems. I mean, in fairness, right? We're really focused in on what do you need to do in the first 90 days, 6 months, in order for you to just rock it? Because we're assigning you a coach, you know, that we're talking to 2-3 times a week. You're in cohorts. We're nurturing you through that whole process. So we don't want to overwhelm you when you come to initial training at all.
All right. So there's marching orders when they go home. There's a sweet spot to the small, mid-size, large companies. Go after this market. Here's their revenue, blank to blank. And that's who they target right out of the gate. Reduce the package price, get in the door, and start creating that momentum, like you said. All right, I like that.
Yeah, just for the first 20 clients. You know, and I've got a newer person who came out of corporate enterprise. That's all he sold his whole life, enterprise. So he's not going to follow that recipe, to be honest.
Okay.
He's going to go after all of his buddies. He knows in CROs, and he knows that's a longer selling cycle, but he's prepared. But I also have a program where we'll go and help you sell those deals. So he's actually referring all of those deals to us initially, so he can watch the process. And that way, he's also working on his local business as he's leveraging his larger contacts while they're still employed at that company, and he still has a great relationship with them. So there's a lot of different models, but that's the model we try to S&B. Stay in the small to medium-sized business. Don't go after the big elephants. No one pays attention to a company with 5 or 6 salespeople. You know, there's just nobody to be paying attention to them. And they're super loyal. You know, where you used to work, loyalty is to the quarterly budget and bonuses, not to who's helping to grow. We've got clients that have been with us for 15, 20 years. So they don't go anywhere. Our average client stays with us for 7 years. They have a lot of needs throughout those 7 years. They give you a lot of referrals. So we just need to help you nest in the industry that you know, in the cycle. You've got referrals locally, whatever the case may be. But we assume that you know nobody locally. That's our assumption. So our marketing machine takes over and really helps build that brand as if you were here for 20 years.
Okay. I was going to ask you, what is the retention, the average length of stay, if you will, of a client? It's long, longer than I thought.
Yeah,
very long. 7 years. And it's all different, you know, it's all different programs. It's like, listen, in year one, we were doing sales, then we did leadership, and then we did all these different modules. Don't you have like hundreds of different teaching, I call them programs?
Yeah, we have hundreds of them.
Right.
You know, if you think about anyone that touches revenue in your company, we've got programs for them. You know, you can have a BD for a business developer. They're setting appointments, got a whole program for them. And then you've got a sales course, you've got enterprise sales, right? You've got advanced stuff, negotiating classes, virtual selling program. I mean, it just goes on and on. The value of Sandler to a company that's growing, that has multiple people helping generate revenue, is it's a common language. Because if you really think about what goes on, sales managers are sent to this course for sales management training. And then you've got your enterprise, your elephant hunters out there doing that program. And then you've got your transactional sales course people over there going through a different course. How do you scale? But if you're going through Sandler, you can go through each part of your career and still have the same philosophies applied differently. And that's the magic. The majority of people that we have two sides of the business. We have S&B and then we have enterprise. Almost 100% of our enterprise business is coming from past S&B clients that have kind of moved up, gone to Google, they went to Salesforce, they went to wherever. And next thing you know, you're training that particular company. And that's the magic.
So I've been in franchise sales, let's say over 20 years. I have seen year after year after year, I feel as if there is a decline in the quality of the salesperson and the sales process. Are you seeing in society, because you're working the globe, are you seeing some type of deterioration in the quality of the salesperson? I'm just picking one profession. What are you seeing? What is your opinion?
I would say that there's a declining quality of sales leadership. I think sales leadership is the hardest job in any company. I think most owners, most C-suite thinks, let's go find our top producer, we'll make him a sales leader, and just replicate yourself. That does not work. And so because there's no training, there's no mentoring for sales leaders, salespeople, the quality of salespeople have declined. Why? And then that's a general statement. I'm sure I'm going to get 1,000 hate mails now. But in general, I think we also rely too much on technology. People still buy from people, and they're going to buy from people who you like. Now, can I get away with not, call reluctance if I would have an AI bot making my outbound calls? Sure. Can I use technology to do some other things? Sure. But that's not a scapegoat for me practicing. And I think that's the other thing. There's no roadmap for salespeople to get from where they are today to where they would like to be without some formal program. How many times have you heard a salesperson say, I've been doing it for 20 years. I'm good. I don't need that.
That's right.
You know what? If my surgeon said that, I'd be in trouble. I don't want the medical industry to say that. Like, why would we say that? And there's no certification. I'd say, I mean, we have it, but there's no industry certification that keeps people learning in the industry. And so we tend to focus more on product training versus, interaction and how do you progress deals and how do you talk to people and how do you overcome these objections and all those things that are based on people and psychology, not my product is better than your product. We've all lost deals to inferior products. You were outsold. I mean, let's just face it, you were outsold. And I think that's really the challenge that we have moving forward is the onslaught of technology since 2020 is becoming so confusing in the marketplace. Now it'll settle down, but the buyer journey has changed dramatically because, the sellers can use technology, but so can the buyers, right? So the buyer probably has already, researched your company, researched your competitors, research their problem. And that's different than let me bring value to the table by telling you about our product and service. They already know that now. That's table stakes. Now you've got to bring something else to the table. And I don't think people are equipped to shift now. And the world is changing. So some of that transactional lower end sales, is that going to be taken over by technology? Probably. It's only a matter of time. But that doesn't mean sales is dead by any means.
Oh, not at all. If anything, there's more demand to hone your skills and be the best that you could be. We do live in a highly specialized society and you better be the best. And we do live in a time where people want to connect. And I think that's one of your secret sauces. It's the psychology. No one wants, the Wolf of Wall Street on the telephone. Remember one of the scenes where he wants to become a stockbroker and he's cold calling people and he goes, drop your fork and grab a pen. I got a hot stock tip for you. Right. So it's like, that people thought, to your point a moment ago, people thought like that's selling. The Wolf of Wall Street, watching them on TV, or Boiler Room. Glenn Ross. No, that's not. And then there's you. In comes Sandler saying, we kind of flipped the script. We base this on psychology. We do more of a needs analysis. Talk about what makes you different, not only from Hollywood scenes, but from other programs. What makes you different?
A couple things. One, I think that it is based on psychology. I think it is based on the fact that we're not for everybody and you should go into that mentality. You're not going to convince everybody of everything. And by the way, you're better off if you don't. I think it's mutual discovery. I think salespeople should have equal business stature. Think about yourself as a doctor of sales. Your doctors say, what? Cliff, before you say anything, let me show you my degrees. Let me show you my building. No, that's not what they do. They say, Cliff, why are you here? Hey, tell me a little bit about that. Right? Hey, so what have you done to try to fix it? Have you been heat, cold? What are you doing? So it's more of a discovery process with the ability for us to mutually agree whether we should continue talking or not. Everything that we teach, first of all, we believe in reinforcement. I don't think you can learn from a fire hose. I think you can't learn just from watching a video or doing those things. I'm a golfer and I'm a hacker. I mean, I'm shooting about 120 in the first nine, so I'm that guy. And so could I go and read a book and do a video? Sure. Is it going to improve my game? No. So I do think, that's our thing. But everything we teach is around what we call the success triangle, which is mindset, behaviors, and techniques. So let's pick an example, prospecting. So we're going to teach you prospecting techniques. We are known for actionable tactics and strategies. Here's our claim to fame. One of them is we're going to teach you what to do. Go get the decision maker. And here's how you do it. Most programs are go get the decision maker.
Right. But they don't teach you how to even get past the gatekeeper.
I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. So it's then here comes the how. That's the magic of there. Now, when you go to the success triangle, it's here are the tactics and strategies, what you say, how you say it, when you say it. Behaviors is how often should I be doing these types of activities? Because if I only do it once a year, it's not going to have any impact. And no one wants to make prospecting calls every day. But if I can just take a little each day, I've got to do 4 each day. I can do that. I can do that. And so it's a behavioral plan. And then it's mindset up top, which is why is it important? And fear of rejection, call reluctance. I do have equal business stature. I do bring value. I can call on you, even though you make more money than I am and you're older than I am and you know your industry better than I do, but I know my product better than you do. And that's where I have equal business stature. All that stuff. But if you just teach techniques, we've all been to a seminar, you get pumped up, you go right back down and nothing changes. And so to have change and sustain change, we believe that's the magic. And so, and that's really what we do. And because we're with other people, think about how we bring you into our program is it's not just one-on-one company, although we do that. You're going to be in a program with different industries, different experiences, different incomes, and your blinders get blown off. Because if I were to show up just as a, well, let's say a tech salesperson and Sandler gave me a technique, they would say, oh, I don't know if that works in my industry. No, that doesn't work in my industry.
Right.
But yet I've got somebody else in the same industry selling different types of tech, let's say, who's been using it for 2 years, blowing me away financially. I'm like, well, wait a minute now. How do you use that? So that's really the magic.
You're great at it, man. You have a ton of energy, great energy. You love it. I mean, all the 36 years later, like you're still doing this. What are you doing right now? You mentioned something like, I'm not in a studio. I'm with franchisees. Yeah, so, what are you doing right now?
So we have our conferences and we have regional meetings where the people get together regionally. And then we have international conferences. And so we have tracks, you know, depending on the topic, depending on how much money you're making. So we can get you to the next level if you'd like to. Awards, all that stuff. So I've been with franchisees now for the last 4 or 5 days. It's been fantastic.
It's great. Good for you. Yeah. A lot of C-level people, they lose the fire over time, right? They just lose that high energy level, the passion. Like they basically forgot where they came from and what got them started in a business. And they're starting to phase out. Man, you're still on fire. I love it. I want to talk a little bit about the core principles and I want to touch on your book a little bit. The one thing I want to understand is because I get the psychology, completely agree with it. What's the upfront contract technique? What are you trying to achieve there?
Well, I think as salespeople, we've all been in the following situation. We started a call and we thought we had an hour because we set that appointment 3 weeks ago. And come to find out, you're my prospect as an example. Midway through, you say, hey, Dave, this sounds interesting, but it really is a lot of stuff going on. I only have like 25 minutes. So could you just put this in writing and send it off to me? Now, I think it's a huge win. You asked me for something. That's horrific. So we've all experienced that. Or I just say, hey, Cliff, thanks for jumping on today. Hey, let me just start off. And then I'm blowing and going. I have no idea what you want to get out of the call. Time is precious, right? But what do they want to get out of the call? You don't know as a seller, right? I'm a seller. As the buyer, you're like, well, where's Dave going today? Like, what's the goal of the call today? So they typically don't share their agenda as a salesperson. The biggest one is we get off the call or we wait until the last 3 minutes, Cliff, and we say, okay, listen, I'll send you something. Well, let's get another appointment. I think we should be doing a couple things right away before the call even starts going is validate time. Right. So basically an upfront contract is setting a mutual agreement about what's going to happen during our interaction. So that's the definition, right? So what's going to happen? And if it is a conversation, you should know where we're going, what we're talking about as the buyer, and so as I should the seller. Otherwise, it's you're trying to figure out what I'm doing, why I'm doing it. And so like, why did he ask me that question? Is that a qualifying question? What is that? I mean, how does that work? So if you want to lower that buyer's seller defensive wall, just tell people what you're trying to do. And if they'll either say, I'm in or I'm out. So how much time do we still have for today? What's the purpose of today? That's a big one, right? Because even though I think as the seller that you've been waiting for this call all week, you just looked up my name again on Outlook. You have no idea. You're like, who's this guy again? Here's what I'd like to cover today as the seller. Here are the 2 or 3 things that I'd like to find out. Cliff, as the buyer? What are the two or three things that you want to make sure that we cover to best utilize your time? So now I've got both agendas out. Because if you don't do that, what I find is that the buyer doesn't really listen because they're trying to get their question in, right? They're like, hey, I've got like two questions I got to get answered today from this guy in order to decide if it's something I want to pursue. But if I don't know that, then A, maybe you don't bring it up. And B, maybe I'm not covering the right things. And the last thing, most important, is what are we trying to decide today? What are we trying to decide today? So it could sound like, you know, if that was it, was the, hey, Cliff, you know, I did the upfront contract. You know, what I found at the end is could probably go in a couple of different directions. Well, first of all, there may not be a fit. And that's okay. If you find right. that, hey, what I deliver and what you're needing, there's a disconnect. Let's just call for what it is. We'll save each other some time moving forward. On the other hand, we may decide that there is a fit. In that case, I like to schedule another meeting. I'm going to bring in an expert. It may make sense for you to bring in a couple people. I don't know, but we'll talk about that. Let's spend about 5 to 10 minutes at the end of the call just to kind of figure out where we are and what are some of the next steps. But my goal would be to set another time for us to connect again. If you think about it, you do this in business meetings. You hand out an agenda, don't you? If you're doing an offsite meeting, everyone knows the agendas, they know the times. Why don't we do that on a sales call? That just blows my mind.
I love it. I also love focus on pain rather than the features. I love that. And talk to us about the dummy curve. This is something I personally experienced, but just for the audience, drill down on dummy curve concept. I think this is fascinating.
So we actually changed the name to curiosity curve.
Okay.
We got a lot of pushback on the dummy curve name.
You did?
The curiosity curve is this. People don't argue with their own data. If you say it, people deny it as a seller. But if the buyer says it, it's true. So if you really think about that for a minute, I have a ton of product knowledge like a doctor does. Right. I'm sure the doctor's heard a million times what you're saying. But then you don't show up to a doctor and say, I've got a back pain. What? I know what that is. Don't even say another word. They are curious. Like, where in the back? Like, how long have you had the problem? What's going on? And by doing that, the buyer is now becoming emotionally involved because they're describing the problem. And they're saying, this person understands. This person, there's a connection. And as a seller, because I am asking the question, therefore, I'm gathering a lot of information, developing trust, credibility by the questions that I'm asking. Because I also think the value of a salesperson is determined by the questions that they ask, not the information they dispense. If you think about that for a second, it's true in the medical industry, and it's true here. So the curiosity curve is just don't show up and throw up all this stuff.
Right.
You know, ask some questions. There's nothing anyone could say that I don't know. Okay, that's true. Except that you sell what you sell every day. They buy what you're selling once in a while.
That's right.
So let them experience it. And you know, Cliff, what I found is those 25-year experienced people, they may not have 25 years experience. Sometimes they have 1 year's experience 25 times.
Right.
They haven't grown.
Right. That's right. I know. I love these people that tell me I've been doing this for 30 years. And it's like, man, you've been doing something wrong for 30 years, or you haven't grown. You haven't honed your skill. When's the last time you read a book? When's the last time you went to a Sandler pro? Like, you know, like you said before, I've been doing this 20 years. I don't need that. You know what's interesting about those folks? When those guys go through the program, they're the ones on YouTube saying, I would be so much wealthier today had I known this 20, 30 years ago. People are in their own way. Remain open-minded, play in traffic, you'll get hit. If you're invited to Sandler through your company, go. If you're invited to anything to grow, go.
There's three things that our clients will tell us. And one is, I wish I had met you 20 years ago. You would have changed my career. Second thing that they say to us is, I use this in my personal life as much as my business life. Because if it is based on psychology and it is conversational, you should be using this all the time. And then the third thing that I hear is, I want my kids to go through it. Because I don't want my kids to go through the 20 years of what I did. Why not let them start where I am right now? And we've got multiple generation clients sitting in programs all day long.
This gives you coping techniques in a relationship, compromising techniques. You know, that old saying, it's seek to understand before being understood. Use this as, well, what are you experiencing? What's your issue with it? Why don't you like it? Right. Absolutely. I could totally see this bleeding into your personal life big time.
I've got 5 children, and I think we're a better family for it, to be honest, using Sandler. So, you know, it's questioning and it's understanding why they're acting certain ways and that all my kids are not the same because every buyer is different too. You know, all that stuff does bleed through.
Tell me about the negative reverse selling technique.
I would, but I don't know if most people think that works.
Really? Is that right? I'm shocked to hear that.
So, and you just saw it happen. I said it to you.
That's wild. Oh, I love it. I was going to say Dwyer Group, which is now Neighborly, this is their entire sales process. They're always walking away from the deal. Like they built a billion-dollar brand on.
You know, because if you said, hey, Dave, tell me about negative selling. Oh, it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. Most people are like, well, Dave, I don't know about the greatest thing since sliced bread. But if I said, I don't know, a lot of people may not think it works. What? That's it? Because here's why. That's psychology at its best.
Set me up.
I'm sorry. But what happens is my opinion, as a salesperson, you ask a lot of positive questions, you're going to get negative responses. It's just because people don't want to be trapped.
Right.
You ask slightly negative questions, you tend to get people saying, well, wait a minute now. Oh, wait a minute. And so the takeaway is if you allow me to take something away, you weren't a prospect and it's okay. If you really were interested and I do a slight takeaway, you'd be like, wait a minute, wait, hold on for a second. And now we're back in the game. And so I think the best way to start a call sometimes is to end a call. Now, it sounds pretty dramatic, but I've closed more deals when somebody says, look, we're perfectly happy. We're doing, you know, we're working with XYZ company. I'm like, that's awesome. Listen, before I go, can I ask you a couple of questions? Like, yeah, sure. Close my notebook in the old days when I'm face to face and all that stuff. And then it starts. So I think it's if you're comfortable talking and not dealing with your product knowledge and just saying, it's okay if it's not for us. If it's not, you'll find out quickly. And I think a no is okay.
Right.
The faster we can determine
that
it's not for you, the better off we are.
Yeah, it's valuable.
Looking at your funnel, look at your funnel. You know, some of that stuff's been in people's funnel for so long. It's got electricity and running water. That's how long it's been in there.
Right.
You know, it's just ridiculous.
Right.
So I'd rather just say, you know, at the end, if we're having like this, you know, this wishy-washy conversation, I'd say, hey, listen, Cliff, as I said earlier, we're not for everybody. I get the feeling, although it's interesting, this may not be the right time for you. You feel, you know, just subtle things like that.
They start selling you on, no, everything
like,
is good.
No, I was
exactly. No, I'm very engaged. I need you at my annual conference in 3 months.
Or even the subtle ones when somebody calls on a referral and say, hey, you know, Dave, I've heard awesome things about Sandler. This is great. What could you do for me? I always start like, well, first of all, I appreciate you calling Cliff. And you heard that from your friend, Sam. But you know, Sam's issues could be different than your issues. I'm not sure we would have the same results. I'm not even sure we're talking about the same types of things. Can we spend a couple minutes maybe and just kind of share with me what you're experiencing? And we can kind of determine if I could have the same types of impact that we've had with Sam, because I'm not sure we can, it's replicable right now. Instead of saying, oh yeah, Sam, we could do it. Let me tell you what we did for Sam. We'll do the same thing for you, buddy. You know, it's all that. When you attack, do you remember you did the taxi thing for me? Do you remember in the carnivals, they used to have that finger thing? If you pull, you couldn't get your fingers out of it.
Oh, that's right.
I think
too
it was called
quickly?
The Chinese hand. Yeah, it's a Chinese handcuffs back then. So it's like, that's really what happens in sales. If you just go do the exact opposite behavior that a prospect expects of you, and you will get the opposite response.
Right.
So you don't want to look like a salesperson, don't act like a salesperson.
Right.
And therefore, you'll get different conversations, and you get closer to the truth, which is really all of our goals, buyer and seller.
This stuff is just invaluable. And you know what? Even for the 2030 year veteran, you know, I had a favorite line when I was managing some teams. People don't need to be told, they need to be reminded. And I love that you rewrote, I want to plug your book. You basically wrote the Sandler rules, the 49 timeless selling principles and how to apply them to your profession, your business. I want to talk about a couple right out of your book, which I think is a must read, top seller. I commend you for writing it and modernizing it a little bit, right? You updated the rules from the 80s, if you will. Talk to me about don't spill your candy in the lobby. Love this one. Rule 25.
So don't spill your candy in the lobby is, think about it in a sales situation, which is we all kind of just show up and throw up. Hey, let me tell you a bit about our company. Let me tell you about our industry. Let me tell you how wonderful we are and all the awards that we've won. No one cares. All they want to know is, let me tell you about my issue. Do you understand the issue? Do I trust that you can fix my issue? And how would you fix my issue? And so don't spill your candy in the lobby is, so I'll go back to the doctor thing. Here's an example of spilling your candy in the lobby. Hey doc, I got a back pain. Let me show you all my degrees. Let me show you all this wonderful multi-million dollar equipment that I have and all those things.
Too much.
That's not what happens.
Right.
No. You know, people buy emotionally and justify intellectually. That's intellectual. And so the emotional is you. Like, tell me a little bit about two or three things that you're experiencing holding you back from where you'd like to be. And so I want to gather, I want to ask. It's almost like salespeople, if we were sued for malpractice, this would be easy, but we're not sued for malpractice.
Right.
We're not really trying to figure out what your problem is as a buyer. We're trying to convince you that I'm an awesome company and you're going to love me. Here's the problem. If you ask any company, and I do this at workshops, you know, hey, what are the top three reasons why people should buy from you? People say service. You know, they'll say this, they say that. What would be the top three reasons a salesperson would say, do you think, just off the top of your head, Cliff? Top three reasons yep. why I would buy from that company. What would right. a normal salesperson say? Reputation, service.
Yep. Right. We're product. Honest. We're going to deliver. We underpromise and overdeliver. Right. The best now, product in the market.
Right. So, by the way, I hate to tell you, but you've been fired. So now you don't work for that company anymore.
Right.
And now you work for their competitor. And you right. just went through 6 months of awesome training. And you met a prospect. And the prospect says, hey, what are the top three reasons I should buy from you? Don't you think they say the same thing? They all sound the same. They all yeah. sound the same. So I think it's that mentality of just don't gather is really that rule.
That's right. You mentioned before about no, like not being afraid of, just touch on that a little bit. I think that's, we love the number 11 here. That was rule number 11.
So I think sales leaders, you should give your team the same amount of accolades for a yes and a no, because what we do want to do is focus on those who can, you know, that we can help and they have a problem that we can solve, not right. anything else. So when you go for the no, I think it's much easier because you're saying, it's okay. We're not for everybody. Let's just mutually figure this out. But if you keep pushing for a yes, you tend to get the no's. If I'm okay with a no, and I even suggest maybe it doesn't fit, I tend to get realistic responses and more yeses, quite frankly. So I think switch it, you know, a no is okay. I even think mentally, if you think about prospecting for a minute, everyone's looking for the appointment. I'm not looking for the appointment. I'm doing X amount of behaviors. I'm just looking for a no's. A no's okay, because I know in my world, I need 20 no's to get one yes. So why look for the yeses? Just keep moving. Right. I got right. 18 no's today. Two more, I'm going to get a yes. So it's that whole mentality that's an okay thing to get a no. But I think, you know, when you go into business, you only want a yes or you're a failure. And I don't think that's the way it works.
Right. Okay. The brand's been around 50 years, right?
Yeah. David actually started way back in 67 in the seminar business, like with the Ziegler routines, right? So all yeah. that stuff. And then really he brought a couple of things to the marketplace. Reinforcement training was a Sandler. The word pain came from Sandler. And so all of that stuff was just designed and by just because he was way ahead of his time. You know, right. he really was way ahead of his time. But it's been around. We franchised in 1984.
Wow. How many franchisees globally?
There's over 200 now.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Open territory. Love the investment range. Anything new, meaning innovative, we've added, we're doing something different. We live in a world of AI. We talked about the deterioration of leadership in the country. Sales leadership, honestly, everywhere has deteriorated over the years. There's no more use. There's no more, you know, Lee Iacocca's. And I haven't seen a Jack Welch in a long time. So we're just different now. What's going on with you and your company? Are you implementing different things to address these cultural and societal changes?
So lots of different things. We're certainly on the low-lying fruit stuff, you know, virtual selling, virtual leadership, you know, all that stuff, because most companies aren't getting together any longer. So we've got that whole program on the AI front as an example. We have embedded AI into our learning system. So as an example, if you took an assessment with us and it said you had the following 5 gaps from a sales skills perspective, I hope your manager coaches you and will do things. But it also, when you take that assessment, it automatically loads those programs into your online learning path. So when you sign in, it says, hey, Cliff, here are the 5 things that you had gaps on. Let's attack those quickly, above and beyond what the trainer's doing, right? Above and beyond. We have AI role play bots now. So if I talk wow. you up on contract like we did, you would actually practice in real life on a video or audio, and the bot's actually playing a prospect. And we can have a generic just practice the technique. But if you worked for, let's say, a manufacturing company, you get to type in, we do, or the manager types in the scenarios, or hey, they're rude, they're working with XYZ company, whatever the case may be. And it's really role-playing with you, and you can throw it curveballs, it's going to come right back at you, and it grades you.
And it's random, and, right? It's because it's AI, it's so it's constantly random.
Yeah, I can be on a phone call at the different scenario now. I can be on a phone call, AI will pop in and say, here's Cliff's personality style. you're not connecting with him. You know, wow. He is a detailed, fact-oriented person. David, you're talking big picture. You need to get to specifics. It's right on my screen. You can't
That's
see it.
That's wild.
But AI is telling me your behavioral style. It's just amazing what goes on. The tools that we've created to help people understand what's going on the other side and to become better than themselves. It's amazing. We just rolled out 4 new tools this conference. AI tools.
AI. Yeah, good for you. I wasn't sure how you're going to answer that, honestly. You know, something like, I'm from Long Island. I actually interviewed many, many years ago with Dale Carnegie. And I thought Dale Carnegie was like, we talk about a guy ahead of his time. I really thought he was way ahead of his time. And
legend.
Today,
legend.
Right?
Absolutely.
I agree with you.
No question.
I feel like they didn't stay cutting edge the way you are. I felt like they just got left behind. It's just my thought.
Well, the buyer journey's changed dramatically. That's in. You said, hey, tell me about the dummy curve. That's not, no.
That's
We've
right.
changed that. The AI is in. I think for us, any franchise company, you don't want to be Blockbuster. So 50,000 people a year for a long time, you have to take your concepts and don't let your pride get in the way and say, that's the way we've done it. That's the way we're always going to do it. But say, okay, well, how do we serve the sellers and leaders of today using our philosophy? And get your ego somewhere else. Let's figure that out. And that's what we've done. We have morphed 7 times since I've been in charge.
Wow. We're approaching, I could do another hour with you going through just the principles. I happen to be fascinated by selling. And I also believed, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart, I think it's the greatest profession ever, is the ability to sell and influence people, solve problems, sell good feelings, sell solutions. I just think it's the greatest profession. I also believe that everything begins after the sale is made. I always hear these people, they're so wonderful at operations and they're wonderful at training and they're wonderful at all this stuff. And it's like, nothing begins until I sell something. And then you guys can operate and train and support, right? It's like, so I just love the being the tip of the spear, being the rainmaker.
There's 13 million of us in the US.
Wow, you quantified it.
13 million, it's the biggest profession.
Wow, okay, that I didn't know.
Biggest profession, largest profession, and the most money made is in sales.
Wow.
And yet society says, Cliff, when you're unqualified to do anything else.
Right, I know. Go sell something. Right, so true. I want to talk about, you're a unique leader to be on the show because you've been at this a long time with one company, not bouncing around. I get a guy on a call with a new logo on his chest. And you know what I mean. You go to the franchise shows and the embroidery changes. What I want to just a little deeper dive here is my final question with you. But your legacy, like you're leaving behind a Sandler legacy at some point. Is it a legacy to your children? Is there a succession plan in place? What do you want to be known for as you exit ultimately? At some point, you'll exit the company. Talk to me about that.
I just had this conversation with somebody last night. My hope, my goal is if you think about the number of people that we have impacted as franchisees and think about the number of people they've impacted, right? Like, so for instance, that to me is fantastic. If I can take somebody who has trusted their family's future in buying a Sandler franchise and they hear from their clients, Sandler has changed my life. I can put my kids through college without debt. I can pay for a wedding. And you guys come to me as franchisees saying, I've had the best ride. I've loved my job. I've got people now that are in their 70s still doing it. Now, are they working 60 hours a week? No, they're working 3 days a week. But they're not going to leave. I did not make this a family business.
Okay.
Did not make it. All my kids have been trained. They're all rock stars using Sandler. And they all worked here for a period of time. Right? Because in the warehouse and they worked their way through. So they became little Sandler people. But to me, I want to build a business that is sustainable. When I'm sitting somewhere at 85 years old and we are the largest, and we are now part of, we're growing Sandler, right? So we're actually putting Sandler into a portfolio that is designed. We have two sides of the business, franchise side and the other side, which is how do you serve a business owner start to finish? Not just sales. We're known for sales. But how do you increase the effectiveness and efficiency of businesses and everyone that works for them? And so we have gone way beyond sales since I started. Right. And I just think if we can continue that, that would be an awesome legacy. When I go through an airport with the brokerage, I always get stopped. Oh, hey. I know Sandler, and they throw it out a rule, dummy curve.
Yep.
That's awesome. Right. I was in the Sistine Chapel Well, you know, with my family, and I hear Sandler.
Yeah. Unreal.
Unbelievable.
That's cool.
And they saw me from videos. To me, the ability to impact that many people's lives, it's just awesome.
I agree. You've increased people's take-home pay. You've allowed people to advance through their career. I mean, think of the legacy you're leaving behind. You're like the greatest educator. I mean, it's one thing to teach a kid and it's like, all right, the kid's doing really good. And then he goes on to become an engineer. Like, but then they get it in front of you, right? In your company.
When I talk to franchisees at their office, but in front of their clients, the impact that they have on their local marketplace is humbling. People come up and they're just hugging them. And I'm like, gosh, that's so cool. They're just thanking that trainer and the franchisee. And to me, that's the greatest thing because it's not about Dave. It's not about Sandler. It's about the local representation of what Sandler is, which is our franchise network.
That's right. You've been a great guest. I cannot thank you enough for taking your time and spending an hour with us. I think it was loaded with just valuable content. Anyone listening in, whether you're listening in to but purchase a franchise or you found yourself on this pod, just say, man, I just got an education on sales and now some could go out and purchase your book or books. I just think it's invaluable. And you've been a great guest and I really appreciate your time.
Well, thanks for having me.
You got it, Dave.